Welcome to the Making Impact series, where we talk to life science thought leaders and how they are making impact with their work and all they do. I'm your host today, Helen Konozopoulos, co-founder of Odea.ai and also an adjunct professor at the University of Toronto, the Department of Computer Science. I am really happy to welcome today Vangelis Varigitis, co-founder of Intelligentsia. Vangelis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation. Great to chat.
So I wanted to kind of, I always ask most of our speakers, you know, what is their origin story? Like, how did you start? Where, you know, you could go as far back as you like, but what was the main, what was your main background of, you know, not only starting your startup, but how did you get to this point?
Well, I don't know how much time we have, so I'm not going to go too far back. Maybe the short version. So if the name didn't give that up, I'm from Greece originally. I finished high school in Greece, and so I've been in the US for 25 years now. So a long time. I'm a little bit of a different breed in terms of, you know, people that are in healthcare. I come from the computer science side, or the technology side, if you will. So I'm not a biologist. I'm not a, you know, IO PhD or anything like that. My academic background is in computer science and electrical engineering. I joke that, well, not a joke, but I trained AI algorithms back in the 90s when nobody cared about them. And the neural network was about, you know, this big, because that's all we could compute at the time. I was a consultant for a long time. So right after my PhD, I joined the consulting world. For about a dozen years, I was at McKinsey for a long time. I focused exclusively in healthcare, and that's what I learned about healthcare and drug development and all the amazing things. You know, it's an industry I now love 15 years later. And the company that I run blends those two worlds, the world of machine learning and technology on one side, and healthcare clinical development on the other. So that's the short version. How I ended up where I ended up, I guess two things. One is I started working in healthcare in my consulting days, and I loved it. And then I already had the bug of technology and machine learning from my academic years. So putting the two together were relatively straightforward.
Was there like one good example of in healthcare that kind of triggered that kind of aha moment for you to say, you know, this is what I want to focus on? I know you're working on McKinsey, you're working on a lot of health projects, but what is the one project or certain area that just went, yeah, this is for me, this is what I got to do?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Helen. So there were a few of them, so I'm not going to walk you through 100 of them. The one area that kept coming up was the area of risk and drug development broadly. And there was a lot of qualitative assessment. There still is a lot of qualitative assessment. Now, I don't want to minimize it. There's large teams, particularly in big pharma, that use data to help companies make better decisions. But at the end of the day, in my McKinsey days and in my experience, there has always been a lot of qualitative expert input into those decisions, you know. Should I continue this development program, or how risky is this development program? What's the likelihood that eventually this drug will end being used by patients? Should I in-license this molecule from this biotech company? And a lot of that decision is made on, you know, what do I think about the quality of the program itself or the clinical trial itself? So I don't know if you're a baseball fan, or if there are any baseball fans that are watching this, but the equivalent is the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt. That basically, the short version is, you know, the way baseball players used to be picked, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and then, you know, in comes Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill in the movie, and they introduce a much more, if you will, quantitative assessment and data-driven assessment of what makes a good baseball team. So that's the closest analogy that I can think of in terms of using data to be able to make better decisions. So back to your original question, you know, the aha moment, if there was such a thing. You know, 15 times after a pharma company comes to a consulting firm and says, hey guys, in this era on big data and all that stuff, do you have some software, do you have some tools that's better than benchmarks or historical averages to assess risk? And after saying no 15 times, my co-founder Demetrios and I figured we might as well build it and say yes from now on and have a software that does this.
Yeah, it's always the, you know, I think when a lot of startups begin is because they find, you know, they're doing great work, but then there's this amazing opportunity where you're like, you know what? I want to say yes. I want to be able to like develop that. I really want to provide that solution. So that congratulations on starting a startup from something that was kind of a pull. And I always talk about push and pulls, but this was like a pull from the industry and from pharma saying we need this, right? And how can you help? I love the analogy of Moneyball. We've used that as well when it comes to what Odea does. We've used it a lot. It really kind of helped people understand, like, you know, how med reps and sales reps are kind of, you know, thinking about HCPs and their journeys. So there's been that kind of, I mean, we're at that tail end, right? At the commercial sales team level, but that same thing, Moneyball, it's like, how are you making data-driven decisions? And, you know, how are you moving, you know, moving that dial of making decision-making that way, like in that real time or at least in your time thinking? I think that's a change of tool usage, I think, by the industry. So I think the question for you is, have you gotten questions around, should, you know, we could make this ourselves, or should we buy from you? Has that been a question you get a lot?
Sometimes, not a lot. So there are some pharma companies, particularly the very, very large ones, that have chosen the path of, we have our own methodology, we got it. It may be similar to ours, it may be not, it may be more accurate, less accurate, doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, they have a methodology internally and that's what they want to do. And that's fine. Now, that said, there are very large pharma companies. Some of our clients are, you know, top three or top five big pharma companies. So it's not necessarily that the bigger you are, the more likely you are to use internal methodologies. But some do, some don't. So it comes up every now and then, but it's more of the exception than the rule. Now, I got to say, they all have some internal methodology, right? The question that we're answering is so core to drug development. You cannot be a pharma company or a biotech company and not have some methodology of assessing the risk of clinical trials. And it's usually, back to Moneyball, a room full of experts that are looking on a lot of data, scratching their heads, looking at the data again, bringing in KOLs and Nobel laureates and whoever it is, and eventually they arrive at an answer. Sometimes it's a great answer, sometimes it's not. So what we are suggesting is not that, you know, you take that room, you throw it out of the window, and you use a piece of software, is that you continue to have that, you know, portfolio review committee of experts or whatever, different companies call it different things, but you continue to have that debate of experts, recognizing that drug development, there's still a lot of art in it, and you cannot, you know, capture everything in an algorithm. But instead of having, you know, 10 experts in the room, we'll have 11 experts, the 10 that you already had, and pull up an extra chair, and that's the machine learning algorithm that challenges the views in the room, gives them a different angle, provides systematic data and, you know, unbiased data, if you will, so that everybody can hopefully arrive at a better conclusion. So it's not either or. What we're suggesting is, you know, continue to do what you're doing. It's very much needed. Supplement it with a machine learning algorithm that eventually will let you arrive at a better conclusion.
Yeah, it's the mixture of the tool set and what needs to be, you know, kind of brought together to say this is, you know, there are multiple benefits, you know, and I think the mixture of, you know, of course, always the human in the loop, always thinking about how are we using better tools, how many checks and balances, like there's all these levels of that. But do you feel like when companies are using your solution, you know, is it a shorter time, or like what is the major benefit that, you know, your, what is your main value proposition that you keep on saying, look, using us does this, you know, what is that kind of benefit?
It's a question. It's a couple of things. One is having a much more nuanced and a much better estimate of the real risk of a pipeline or a clinical program so that you either stop things earlier or you accelerate things much faster because you now have conviction that what I'm starting to see in my phase two is actually incredibly positive when compared to everything else out there. So I might as well put a lot of money to work now and accelerate that program. Or the other way around sometimes, right? The hardest decision of all sometimes is when to not do things. So giving people the comfort or giving companies the comfort or a much more nuanced understanding of risk so that they can make better decisions and better allocation of resources and capital. That's one. The second one is, can we systematically reduce the risk of drug development so we can take molecules to patients more effectively, more efficiently, faster, if you will? So could we take every clinical program out there that a large company has and reduce the risk just by a little bit, 10%? So if you make, you know, if you have a 30% chance of approval, make it 35, make it 33, make it 40. If you do this consistently for every program, there's tremendous value to patients that will come from that, given that more programs will succeed or are more likely to succeed, and other programs that were, you know, bound to fail, if you will recognize that earlier on. These are the two things for their internal decisions. The third one is, and as we've seen a lot, right, if you're a big pharma these days, a lot of your early your discovery or your early development, you don't do it in-house. It comes from the biotechs that are out there. So allowing them to have a much better pulse of what's going on out there and how do they make those partnering or in-license or co-development deals. So that, you know, how do I assess the program that this biotech in South San Francisco or in Toronto or in Japan or in, you know, Switzerland has? I need a very quick outside-in check so that I can assess the quality of that program, the quality of the pipeline before I go and partner with them. Again, the ultimate benefit is making a better decision and having a clinical program that is more likely to benefit patients at the end of the day.
Can you go a bit deeper on that? I want to ask the question around kind of the ultimate impact that you're going to have on patients and their journeys. Like, what does that look like? Like, what is the, you know, it might not be something that you're doing, but like that will present, like,
yeah,
what I'm trying to say is like the what would be the major impact that you're going to have down the line to a patient?
Yeah,
I think that's my question.
That's a great question. We don't, to be clear, right, we don't develop drugs. We're not going to come up with a new drug. There's amazing companies out there, whether they're traditional biotech or some of the newer, you know, AI-driven biotechs that discover drugs. They do that.
You're part of a larger chain, kind of that larger chain of yeah.
Exactly. Incredibly valuable and probably the most valuable endeavor, which is, you know, can I find a drug that cures a horrible disease or slows down a horrible disease or whatever it is? We don't do that. What we do is allow drug developers to make better decisions, allocate capital better, and to your point, when it comes to what's the benefit to the patient, you will see better drugs reaching patients faster. That's eventually what we want to do. When Dimitri and I, when we saw, if you looked at R&D productivity in healthcare or in drug development, it was going down, and it may still be going down for all I know, but it's been going down for many years. And so basically, companies were spending more money and there were fewer drugs coming out at the end of the pipeline. Where the question was, or the exam question for us was, can we reverse that? Can we use the same amount of dollars or even fewer dollars and come up with more drugs or better drugs for patients? What's the tool that's needed to allow companies to do that? Better assessment of risk. That's where we start. There's a lot of other things, by the way. How can you run better clinical trials? How can you be more effective there? How you can recruit patients faster? In your end, how you can commercialize those drugs better? So there's a lot of other stuff. I don't want to say by no means we're the only thing that is needed so that patients eventually have better drugs faster. But we're one of the pieces that when they all come together, everybody benefits.
I just love the story that, you know, it's, you know, from where you started to where you're at now. I kind of want to also ask my kind of my second last question, but where are you at now at Intelligentsia? Like, where are you at as a startup? Like, where are you at? Team funding, where are you growing?
So we have matured a bit, right? So we're not the early startup anymore. We've built a leadership team of amazing people. But to give you a sense of the numbers, right? So we now serve half a dozen or so pharma biotech customers that are just buying the software. We have about 80 something or closer to 90. I mean, we hire almost one person a week at this point. So we're closer to 90 people at this point. A lot of them based in Greece, based in Athens, or remotely, frankly. But the customer-facing team is in the U.S., so business development and customer success in the U.S. But in terms of people, we're in the 80-90 range. And we're going to be, by the end of the year, we're probably going to be 110 or maybe even more. Funding, we've raised about $15 million, 1.5. The last round was our Series A round back in August, where we raised $12 million. The rest was earlier rounds and convertibles and things like that. So that gives you a sense of, you know, how many customers, how many people, funding and all that. We'll probably raise another round by the end of this year, or at least start raising by the end of this year so that the money's in the bank in let's say, Q1 of 23. We'll see how the markets evolve. As you may have noticed, the markets have not been kind to anybody in the last 6 months, particularly to biotech and pharma. So we'll see, and we're keeping an eye on how that evolves. But that's the plan right now.
That is wow! Congratulations for growing the team. I know there's a lot of growing pains. We're there too when it comes to, you know, growing a team. You know, getting to 50 for us, and it's just. As one startup founder to another, you know, I know what you're going through kind of, you know, it's a little bumps and bruises, but you know, it's exciting when.
So walk in the park. I don't know what you're talking about, Helen.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's totally fine. And I think when it comes to, you know, it's just the biggest important thing for us is just, you know, making sure we're serving our clients and getting more customers, you know, like that's pretty much, you know, our goal in life. Final question is, personally, what do you feel like in the next 5-10 years that you want to make an impact in the industry?
I wish I had an answer for you. There's way too many things in the healthcare industry in the US, but frankly globally, there's a lot of how do I put it, inefficiencies, and there's a lot of things that can be done better. Whether you're talking about drug development, whether you're talking about the commercial side, whether you're talking about how drugs are being paid, hospital operations. I mean, there's all sorts of things. There's no shortage of things that can be done better and more efficiently. So what I'd love to do, and we're having discussions with the company now, you know, I'm already looking at what's next. You know, what's the next company I want to start? What's the next thing I want to do? We'll see where that takes us. I've made zero decisions at this point, but it will always be, I think there will be two things that whatever I do will have in common. One is being in the intersection of healthcare and technology, and two, ultimately work on something that will make some better. It's not going to be everybody's lives, but it's going to be some population or some patient who's going to live better because of it. When those two things are in common, I'm game. What would the next thing be? I have zero clue, but will be something.
Spoken like a true startup founder, I think when you get, when you start seeing, you see problems everywhere and all you want to do is solve them. And I think that's why we're here, because we're just excited to build. And especially being technologists, you know, for us, same thing, you know, coming from technology and saying, I can solve that. I can do that. I think this is where it gets you really like revved up and gets you up in the morning to say, I can do this. I really want to thank you, Vangelis, for coming on to the show. This has been a great conversation. I love the work you're doing. And again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And we'll happy to carry the conversation and have longer conversations over a drink at any point.
Yes, completely. I totally accept that invitation. Thanks again.
Excellent. Thank you.
I really want to thank everyone who joined us today for the Making Impact series, where we talked to an amazing life science thought leader in his industry. Again, thank you again, and see you at the next episode.